So we've been hearing about this ever since Governor Lamont made his budget address to the General Assembly earlier this month, that one of the items in there that really is not sitting well with a lot of people, especially if you attend UConn, is that Governor Lamont's proposal would cut $360 million over a two-year period from UConn's budget. And recently, the university's president said that is going to lead to a tuition hike, a significant one, might I add. So you may be asking, well, why is this happening? Governor Lamont's proposed budget technically is increasing the baseline appropriations for UConn and, you know, the regional state universities and community colleges. Overall aid, though, for all higher education units would shrink over the next two fiscal years to make that happen. So that's why there's a lot of outrage, especially if it means you're going to be paying a lot more to go to the state school, to go to UConn, which is already just so incredibly expensive. So joining us this morning is UConn's student government president, Mason Holland. And there is a rally expected to happen in the day ahead. So Mason joins us now with the very latest details and hearing specifically from the student body the concerns. Good morning, Mason. Welcome to WICC. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Thank you for asking. First of all, tell us just your reaction, being the president of the student, you know, government at UConn. When you first heard about this and, wow, this was going to be a significant cut for UConn, what were your initial thoughts?
Yeah, my initial thoughts were, first and foremost, you know, I think about all the students that are going to be put in uncomfortable positions to figure out their education from here on forward if this is to go through. And that's always really where my first thought goes in my role. And, you know, that's why I'm here, is to serve students. And that's why we're doing what we're doing today, and why we've been working so hard to put everything together to go to the Capitol, later today, just because we understand how impactful it could be. My first thoughts were honestly just anxious and concerned, just for what this would mean for students, not just students that are going to still be here after I graduate this year, but also generations of students that come to UConn and, you know, the kids that are sitting home watching UConn play basketball and hoping they can one day join UConn Nation. So I was definitely worried when I first found out, but, you know, that anxiety quickly turned into action. I'm grateful for not just our student government, but everybody in UConn Nation that was able to come together and rally around what we're hoping to do later today.
A true representative of the student body. So you're a senior, you're graduating. This actually will not impact you, technically, but you still want to take action for future classes at UConn. I think that's pretty cool.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, when I got to school, you know, my mother, I'm a son of an educator. My mother has been an educator ever since I was younger. And I remember, you know, when we used to talk about her job and just what to do in situations where, you know, we want to create change and we want to create lasting impact. She told me, you know, leave the place better than the way you found it. And that's always been my intention. That's always been my goal, especially in spaces like this. And, you know, I think you're 100% right. This will not affect me. And honestly, this has nothing to do with me, you know, but this has everything to do with the kids that are going to be here next year and the kids that are going to come to UConn. And, you know, we should all care about who's coming next, not just because it affects us, but because it affects the things that we care about. I care about this university. It's offered me so many opportunities, but I also care about the kids that are going to come through this university as well. So it's honestly the least that I could do. And I'm grateful to be in a position where not only my student body trusts me, but where I can work with so many wonderful advocates, undergrads, grad students, faculty, admin alike, that are willing to come together and rally around this today.
So, Mason, I know this interview is kind of last minute. So when the time comes that your mom listens back to it, shout out to you, Mom. You raised an amazing individual. Just saying. I'm very impressed by you, Mason. So we're talking this morning to Mason Holland, who is the UConn student government president. And UConn, you've got more than 1,000 students today expected to walk out and get on buses and head on up to the state capitol where you are rallying for change. Specifically, what are you looking to have done?
Well, the first thing that we want to have done is we want Governor Lamont and the CGA to really understand, you know, why we are here. You know, we're here, you know, understanding, you know, that the baseline is technically rising, right? But we are given technically more money than we were given pre-COVID, but, you know, we are incurring additional costs that, you know, other state agencies are not forced to take on. And at the same time, you know, we haven't been critically engaged on not only the plans to get to this point, but also how these processes would affect us. And I think that's something that, you know, has been incredibly absent from this process. I think a lot of times, you know, especially in cases like these, you know, it's easy to look at numbers and you know, really try to organize things and make things work for the state in absence of stories and in absence of, you know, hearing how these services truly affect students. So what we're looking for is we're looking for increased financial support, and we hope to get to that point by coming and giving these stories. Because as you said, like, this is not going to affect me, but my UConn story matters, and I think it paints a very vivid picture of how UConn impacts so many of us. But at the same time, my story is not the only one that matters. That's why we wanted students to come out. That's why we wanted students to come and join us today, because we want them to share, you know, with folks that are going to be there, how UConn has impacted them, how UConn has afforded them opportunities that they may have not otherwise been able to receive, you know. So we are looking not just for that financial support, but also, you know, for folks to listen, for folks to understand where we're coming from, and to understand, you know, we are the ones on the front line of this issue. You know, it isn't administration that's out here. It isn't faculty necessarily that's out here. It's students, and the students first. Students are the ones that, you know, have led this initiative from the outset, you know. And yes, we are standing in solidarity with everybody at this university, but, you know, we were the ones that came out first because we knew how this would affect us. And I also want to give a really big shout out to Irene Soderio and John Hyden, who have also been incredibly instrumental and have really orchestrated this whole campaign. Because, you know, we are trying to serve students. We are trying to get the CGA and the governor to listen. And we hope that the stories that we tell and, you know, the wisdom that we can impart today can hopefully get them to change their mind to make some better decisions moving forward.
What time is the rally?
So the rally would be getting together around 12, around noon. We're leaving our campus in a ton of buses around 10:45 a.m. So we hope to be down at the Capitol around noon. We plan a rally outside the Capitol, have a ton of people speak. And in that setting, you know, offer, you know, the opportunity for people to share their stories and to hear, you know, where they're coming from, how UConn has uniquely affected them, impacted them, but also what these cuts would look like and how they would affect them. So noon is when we're hoping to get together. If anybody's listening that plans to come down or really just plans to support, that's the time we are convening. So we hope you come out. We hope you support our cause. And, you know, we're grateful that, you know, we get opportunities like this to continue to spread the word about it. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, certainly from the news end of things, I look forward to seeing how lawmakers will respond to it. And good luck to you and all of UConn Nation in just trying to have your voices be heard and see, you know, what changes could come about from it. So hats off to you, Mason Holland. Good luck to you and your whole UConn team. And we'll look and see what happens after today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too. Again, Mason Holland, who is the UConn student government president, just chatting this morning about the rally that's happening today. More than 1,000 students at UConn will be boarding buses and rallying at the state capitol, hoping that Governor Lamont will change his mind about his proposed budget cuts for the university, which not only could lead to tuition hikes, but already UConn's president also said that they have threatened to pull sports from the Excel Center in response to those cuts. So some serious things that could come down the line if this were to move forward. We'll see what happens after the rally. So this was in our news earlier this week. Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz was actually in Stamford. She was holding a press conference with the Connecticut Pharmacists Association on the administration's proposal to allow pharmacists to prescribe oral contraception. But this proposal would allow pharmacists to prescribe things like birth control without patients first needing to visit their doctor. Now, of course, this is a very controversial topic, and so we want to hear from both sides of the aisle on it. Joining us this morning is State Senator Ryan Fazio back on the show with us. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm great, Melissa. Good to be back with you.
I'm glad to have you here as well, Senator Fazio. I mean, how does the Republican Party feel about this? I mean, again, I know you're not speaking for the entire party, but what is the general consensus? It sounds like not in favor of this idea.
Of pharmacists prescribing birth control.
Correct.
Actually, strongly in favor.
In favor.
Senator Heather Summers and I proposed a bill. We're the only ones who actually proposed a bill to allow for exactly this in Connecticut. So SB 171 is our legislation. It's the only legislation on the topic. before the legislature. It's something I've run on for a couple terms, and it's something that I've been wanting to get done because 20 other states have already allowed it, both blue states and red states, believe it or not. South Carolina allows it, as well as several other red states. And the premise is that, hey, this is a pharmaceutical intervention that's been available for over 60 years to women, and that women deserve the optionality, the choice, in order to make healthcare decisions in a more flexible manner. They need better access to contraception. And that if pharmacists who are trained are an option that they want to avail themselves of to fill a birth control prescription, then that's something they should have available to them. So it's something that that pharmacists in the medical community broadly has been in favor of. The AMA, the American Medical Association, actually is in favor of oral contraceptives being available over the counter, so no prescription needed. But that's a federal issue. This is a halfway step. This allows trained pharmacists with a connection to a doctor to prescribe oral contraceptives directly themselves. And women, again, not a mandate. This is a choice that would be given to women. So we think it has bipartisan support, and we're looking forward to moving it forward this term.
So, Senator Fazio, forgive me. I think the reason I thought the Republican Party was not for this, not even realizing that you're behind the bill, the reason that I thought the Republican Party didn't like it was because in the past, when you talk about things like birth control or, of course, abortion being a really big thing, one of the things I can remember that was discussed is the fact that, if it was over the counter, the idea that you can get access to this without not only a doctor's prescription, but without a parental consent. So can you clarify that? I mean, if this were to become something pharmacies could just give to kids, like if they, not kids, but, teens, but I guess they are kids, if they could give it to them, it's over the counter, would they still be required to have parental consent?
Well, this would not be over the counter, and that would be a federal making oral contraceptives, the traditional pill over the counter would be a federal decision.
Okay.
But this is just to allow pharmacists to prescribe it, and
okay.
That would
if
you're a minor, you would still have to have consultation with a parent in order to approve it.
So this is you're saying, like, in the world that we live in where health insurance is incredibly expensive, and even going to see a doctor just to have a consultation, let alone a diagnosis, is going to cost a lot of people money. This allows you to go to the pharmacy, almost like when you go to get your flu shot. A pharmacy can give you your flu shot, and this would, if this were to pass, this would allow pharmacies to prescribe you a birth control pill.
Yes, and the pharmacist would have a standing order with a physician, and they would have training in filling the prescription as well. As you point out, it's not always easy. It's not always cheap to see a physician. We deal with shortages of physicians in the medical industry. And this provides easier access to women. It provides a choice, a different avenue, if they find it convenient, if they find it easier. And in places like California, which have had this for now 6 years, 74% of women in a survey said that they've availed themselves of this option in that time. So there's been it's been well received in the 20 states that it's been implemented.
So we're talking this morning to Republican Senator Ryan Fazio, who is one of the leading voices behind a piece of legislation that would allow pharmacies to prescribe certain types of birth control. And I didn't know if you could expand on that even a little bit, because we've had questions about that. Senator Fazio, what kinds of birth control would they be able to prescribe?
This is the traditional of the pill, the oral hormonal contraceptive, the most common type that's use. There's been discussion about Plan B, that the morning after pill, that is already sold over the counter. As
and I don't think you need a pharmacist to, it's over the counter. You don't need a pharmacist to prescribe that to you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, the thought is that if that's allowed over the counter, there's no real good reason that, that there wouldn't be better access to the traditional oral contraceptive, the hormonal contraceptive. So this isn't going all the way. Our bill, our prescription, so to speak. But it's providing an easier pathway, easier access to the pill, to birth control, and giving people another option.
So, and it sounds like it has bipartisan support.
Yep. And, you know, we're the only bill or proposal in the legislature on the topic. The governor and lieutenant governor are supportive of the underlying substance. We have a Democratic co-sponsor on the bill. We have Republican co-sponsors on the bill. We have men and women on the bill. So it's getting all different types of diverse support. And it received in its first step, it's the vote to raise it for a public hearing. It got overwhelming support from the Public Health Committee, 34 in favor, only three against.
Wow. Wow. State Senator Ryan Fazio is here for a few more minutes. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about lawmakers from both sides of the aisle, as well as consumer advocates, actually, saying that PURA should not be part of the Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, DEEP. Why do you say that, Senator Fazio?
So PURA is basically the quasi-judicial body that hears cases, disputes over energy issues related to the utilities. About 11 or 12 years ago, it was combined and put underneath the Department of Environmental and Energy. And DEEP is more of a political and policy-making body.
Mm.
So the fact that a kind of a judicial body would be subordinate to a policy-making body in the executive branch, I think, is at best suboptimal, and at worst, and the quote that, you know, has been repeated in the papers that I said, is that it subordinates the interests of the ratepayers to other considerations. And now more than ever, it's clear that ratepayers have been screwed in this state. They are not being treated well. Our electricity costs are too high, and they keep going up. And this is an arrangement that's extremely unusual. I think we're the only state in the country that has our kind of adjudicative body that oversees utilities and protects ratepayers subordinate to policymaking actors in the state government. And so the experiment hasn't worked. Our rates keep going up, and it gets worse and worse. And so I think it's time to reorient ourselves to change that and have greater independence for PURA so that we can have better protection for ratepayers. And so DEEP can do its job well, focus on, you know, the long-term energy goals and environmental goals of the state. But clearly this is an experiment that hasn't worked. We're feeling it every day right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is a logical change.
So as the ranking Senate Republican on the Energy Committee, what did you think when Eversource reported profits of $1.4 billion last year? Record profits. Record profits. I mean, and I love, you know, and I've had Eversource on the show before, so I'm not knocking, like, their, you know, Mitch Gross, who's come on the show and is always open to coming on, and I appreciate it. But, you know, you always hear from the company officials that the price increases that we are dealing with are on the supply side of the bill, so the company earns no profits. I mean, but when you hear record profits last year, it certainly doesn't sit well with any of us. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, and it shouldn't. I don't think that Eversource and UI, frankly, do a very good job as utilities in Connecticut. You know, J.D. Power and other, you know, famous consumer advocates, consumer reports rate them as among the worst for customer service in the industry. And so I don't think they're doing a very good job, and we need stronger oversight of the utilities. And that's exactly what half of my bill, SB 123, which is a major energy reform bill aimed at lowering costs and strengthening oversight of the utilities, is all about. We can't blame them for everything. I mean, they aren't responsible for the generation of electricity by and large, so fluctuations in prices can't really be laid at their feet. But you know, the overall job that they do over many years has been at best underwhelming, and so we need better oversight. We need stronger oversight. And then writ large, we need an energy policy in the state that reduces costs for consumers. That's the bottom line. Connecticut's electricity costs are the highest in the lower 48. And if we do not lower the costs and improve the reliability of generation of power in the state, it's not just going to be a problem of high costs in the future. It's going to be a problem of reliability and ensuring that in times of peak demand, the lights stay on. And that's actually, I think, a real concern in New England, and it's not something that policymakers have been attentive to for many years, and that's why it's getting worse.
Mm. Well, we certainly will see, and again, another bipartisan effort that's being discussed right now in Hartford, just even beginning steps of separating PURA from DEEP and seeing if that would make any kind of a major difference. Senator Ryan Fazio, I appreciate the work that you do, and I thank you so much for coming on and outlining some of the efforts that you are specifically in charge of in getting behind. And I look forward to getting an update, seeing what happens.
Anytime. Always happy to come on, Melissa.
Love having you here. Senator Fazio, thank you so much. Always appreciate it. And we'll be talking to you really soon.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio. Now on Melissa in the Morning. On WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Dan. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Are you feeling better?
I am. Thank you very much. Yes, it's been the cold that won't go away.
I know. My poor listeners, you can probably hear it in my voice. I have had this weird, lingering, raspy voice clear my throat off air issue for like a month now. I don't know. Yeah. It's driving me nuts. And of course, the doctors are like, that's just kind of the season. I'm like, great. When is the season over?
Yeah.
So
it's been going out. It's been going out in the house since November. It's like a cycle. We keep spreading it to each other.
I know. It's crazy. It's so crazy. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better this morning.
Thank you.
This is a tough spot to be in because I know that you serve both Bridgeport and Stratford technically, but I have to ask you this question. I was curious what you thought about the debate over the pending sale of Connecticut Airport Authority taking over Sikorsky Airport, because I was reading an article earlier this week that both lawmakers in Stratford, the Senator Kevin Kelly, the state's the minority leader in the Senate, as well as Democratic Representative Joe Gresko, now have four bills that are being debated in Hartford. And basically, it would delay the process even more of the CAA purchasing Sikorsky and potentially have Stratford have more of an influence on the sale. What do you think about this? I mean, the CAA had come on last year saying, like, listen, you know, the T's have to be crossed, I's have to be dotted. It's not officially ours yet, but it's looking more and more promising. And here we are almost a year later and still no deal, essentially.
Yeah, you know, it's, I guess, the story of our lives here in this part of the state. You know, things seem to be just always slower than we always hoped to have. But my perspective, Melissa, it hasn't really changed in terms of the airport. I think we talked a little bit about it a while ago when the announcement first happened. I think, you know, having an airport authority like the CAA to come in and take over is a good thing for the region. Obviously, this is what they do. Clearly, the city of Bridgeport, as operators of the airport, you know, they were losing money every year, I think up to the tune of $500,000 every
year. Yes, I think you're right. It's like $500,000 a year or something like that.
Exactly. So, I don't see how the town of Stratford would be able to do any different than that. You know, it's not their priority. It's not what they do. That said, like any municipality, putting on the Stratford hat, like any property in your town, when you have an opportunity or a development or something, you want to have a say in what happens there. The challenge is, oftentimes when there's a property that is in ownership of a developer or someone else and it's zoned for a particular use, you know, the cities and towns have limited ability to control what happens on that property. So they're, you know, they see an opportunity here to at least have a little bit more say. And I get their concern. I don't think the town of Stratford has any concerns about the airport itself. Obviously, it's been in Stratford forever. And I think what their concern is you know, some of the environmentals and in losing the control of any expansion. Now, I don't get the sense that there's going to be major extensions of runways and things of that nature.
CAA said there was no runway extensions. They said they're not doing any runway extensions.
Yeah, they could say one thing, right? But I think they just want to reinforce that they don't.
In writing.
Exactly. And, you know, the reality is, you know, I'm not in the aviation field, but what I hear and see with a lot of these regional airports is the runways don't need to be as long as they used to because the newer planes just don't need that kind of length. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think from the Stratford side, they have a right to at least, get more involved and engaged, the airports in their town, so I understand that. But at the same time, from an operating perspective and a business perspective, I think having a reputable organization like the CAA, this is what they do. They've had great success with Bradley. And having a regional resource like the airport right here in Greater Bridgeport is an awesome thing for business. It's an awesome thing for the people who live here. I think it opens up a lot of opportunities for us at the Business Council as it relates to business recruitment and retention. It's a great economic driver, and we've got all the other modes of transportation here already. So to be able to expand upon the airport as a resource for the region is a wonderful thing. And, hopefully we can all come together and figure out how to move this forward.
So we're talking this morning to Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And another thing that I noticed, Dan, last week it was, and there's very limited tickets that are left. James Taylor went on sale for the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater in Bridgeport, and he's going to be performing in a few months on a Monday night in June. I was shocked at how expensive the tickets were, so we didn't end up buying them. I was really taken.
I couldn't get on. I tried.
You
to
couldn't get on.
I was going to message you. Yeah, I couldn't get on. I had
really?
The code. Yeah, and for some reason or another, then I got busy with work, of course. So I texted my wife and said, "Hey, if you get an opportunity, see if you can get these tickets."
Yeah,
and she couldn't get on either. She was busy with work.
So I got on. I used the code. I got on. And they were only selling them by singles at the point that I had gotten on. So maybe that there was just like a trafficking issue. I tried to get on right after 10, like around 10:05, and at that point, they were only selling single tickets, which I was like, "Oh my gosh!" So I tried again for the general public. And when I tried, again, I did it right around 10 o'clock, and I was shocked, Dan. I mean, when I looked at the tickets, it was like at least on average for even just a decent seat. We're not even talking about like killer seats. At least $350 per ticket on average. And I thought to myself, this is nuts. Like, nothing against James Taylor. I love James Taylor.
Of course. Talked
about it on the show. But I mean, he's 74 years old. I know he hasn't been on tour in a while. And I think to myself, okay, here's an older artist, but you're going to have a family of three? Spend $1,000 to go to Bridgeport to watch James Taylor. Like, that just seemed insane to me. And I didn't know, like, what your thoughts were. I know people are buying the tickets. They're not all sold out. But, we've heard about this on a national scale with, like, Ticketmaster and Live Nation and, like, looking at Taylor Swift tickets being, like, $1,000 a piece. I just didn't know what your thoughts were on it, more from, like, a business perspective, not specifically the amphitheater, but just this model of music tickets and being just so incredibly expensive. Same thing for like sports tickets. Everything is so expensive and it's like not even worth, going broke over it.
Yeah, it's a sign of the times. It's going to be really interesting. The affordability for families is and everything, it just seems like everything is going up and up and up. But at the same time, from the business side of it, their costs are going up, right? And then coupled with the fact that I think and I'm just speaking from my perspective, this is not the BRBC saying this, but, artists, they've been locked up for the last 3 years, and I think they're, so they're coming out now. And I think there's this, anxiousness to get back on the road and do their tours and, And I don't know if it's a bit of, you know, maybe taking advantage of the opportunity because they have been shut down for a while. But at the same time, I mean, I remember 20 years ago, we were complaining about the $75 ticket to go see the Eagles, you know. And it was like, that's outrageous. You know, but
yeah,
we still did it.
Right. You still did. Yeah. It just feels like I thought to myself, like, I was thinking of taking our 4.5-year-old. I think I told you that. And I'm like, I can't even justify. I'm like, we'll go to Chuck E. Cheese's with him. Like, there's just no way you could justify a $300 ticket for a 5-year-old. Like, that's just obscene to me. But
right. Well, let me add this. So I have a really good colleague of mine, a friend of mine that works for one of these digital sport gaming organizations, mm-hmm. and they are, you know, with the whole virtual reality technology, and they were testing, you know, for NBA games, these virtual reality lenders where you can have center court seat from the comfort of your home, and you had to subscribe. You know, you're going to have to subscribe to it, but you can literally be watching the game from your couch, mm-hmm. feeling like you're at center court. Imagine
that's the future.
That's how technology is going to change things. And I'd be really curious to see how it impacts our big arenas and theaters and, you know, over time, because that's, I think, where things are going. It's really an incredible time to be alive.
It definitely is. It's an interesting time to be alive. That's for sure. And I know that they've been testing that for concerts as well. So definitely a great topic to keep an eye on, Dan. Thank you always for coming on and just swinging for the I feel like with whatever I throw at you, you always you swing for the fences, and I appreciate you. I really do.
That's a good baseball analogy. You know, baseball, I'm ready for pitchers and catchers.
Oh, gosh, I know. My husband told me the Red Sox have already gotten their pitchers out there, which doesn't thrill me because I'm a Yankees fan. But, you know, yeah, that's another story. But thanks, Dan. Exactly. Always appreciate you.
You got it. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.